What's up, lovely people? Hope you had an awesome weekend. I got to carve some pumpkins. I got to meet some of you, like Rufus and Conrad, at the old Fourth Ward Skate Park here in Atlanta, tearing it up. Fall is in the air. Halloween is tomorrow, and I'm ready to rock this week with you. I'm Coy Wire. This is CNN 10, and we do have to begin with some heavy news. An update for you out of Israel and Gaza. This weekend, Israeli ground forces entered the Gaza Strip in a new phase of fighting in this three-week-old war. The Israel Defense Force, or IDF, said they're bringing in infantry, armor, and engineer units. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said this is an all-in attempt to destroy Hamas and free over 200 hostages. The hostages were taken during the deadly October 7th attack on Israel by Hamas, the militant fundamentalist Islamic organization operating in West Bank and Gaza. Israel also ramped up airstrikes over the weekend, with many Palestinians saying it was the most intense destruction seen to this point. On Saturday, Prime Minister Netanyahu warned of a long and difficult war ahead.
Our heroic fighters have one supreme goal, to destroy this murderous enemy and ensure the existence of our country. We always said, never again. Never again is now.
While the IDF says Gazans who had moved south would be in a protected space, the World Health Organization said communication lines are down, making any further evacuation suggestions or aid impossible. On Sunday, the Israeli military says more aid trucks will enter Gaza soon. Many around the world, including Pope Francis, are calling for a ceasefire, as aid agencies say humanitarian conditions for those caught in the crossfire are desperate and deteriorating.
As we speak, people in Gaza are dying. They are not only dying from bombs and strike. Soon, many more will die from the consequences of siege imposed on the Gaza Strip.
In a statement, IDF said warplanes hit 150 underground targets Friday and said airstrikes and ground forces are aiming their efforts at destroying Hamas bases. One major area of concern is that those bases are extensive throughout civilian areas, often close to or even under homes, even hospitals. Here's CNN's Tom Foreman to explain more on Israel's planned attacks.
The result of all of this, well, we've seen some of the video of that, and it's really quite a sight to see. In some cases, whole buildings gone. In other places, whole blocks gone. The Israelis have insisted that what they're doing is trying to target military assets, although that may include, for example, the home of a Hamas leader, where there may be a lot of people involved. There's a hospital in which Hamas says, well, that's a hospital. The Israelis say, yeah, it's a Hamas base hiding in a hospital, that sort of thing. Going after the entrances to tunnels. The tunnel network there is a big deal. Going after command and control structures. If you look at an overall satellite map of the area, you can see that in the northern part here, this is where most of this has happened, this is where most of the population lives, every little orange dot there represents one of the strikes that we know of. There's been talk of Israeli troops coming into this area as well. What it all adds up to is really, as we said at the beginning, an extraordinary military assault on this area. Yes, Hamas has still tried to fire some missiles out striking Israel. Some of them have struck. That seems to be greatly reduced as this tremendous military pressure comes into this area, and we wait to see what might come next.
This weekend, it looked like someone took a giant bite out of the moon in what's known as a partial lunar eclipse. People in Europe, Africa, Asia, and Western Australia saw it best, but if you were here in the U.S. on the eastern coast, you may have spotted it too. A lunar eclipse only happens when we have a full moon. We also call that a hunter's moon, which may have gotten its name as it once warned hunters to prepare for a cold winter. Many of you may remember, we learned all about solar eclipses on CNN 10 a few weeks ago. That's when the moon passes between the Earth and Sun. Well, for a lunar eclipse, they switch positions. Can you guess how? Here's CNN's Rachel Crane to help us out.
A lunar eclipse is when the moon passes through the Earth's shadow. This only occurs during a full moon. Two factors decide which of three possible eclipses the moon will experience: the tilt of the moon's orbit around the Earth, and which of the Earth's two shadows the moon falls behind. The Earth's darker inner shadow is known as the umbra, and the lighter outer one is called the penumbra. The penumbral eclipse is when the moon passes through, you guessed it, just the penumbra. NASA says this type of eclipse is so subtle that if you didn't know it was happening, you might not even notice it. A partial eclipse is when the moon only gets covered by part of the Earth's umbra, so only part of it is shaded in darkness by the Earth. A partial eclipse happens at least twice a year. And then there's the big one, the total lunar eclipse. These are rare, often separated by years, and require the moon, Earth, and sun to be in perfect alignment. But don't think this blacks out the moon. As the moon shifts deeper into the umbra, it takes on a red hue, which is sometimes called a blood moon. The moon turns red because the atmosphere is filtering out color at the opposite end of the visible spectrum, the blue light. The short wavelengths of blue don't travel as far as the long red wavelengths, so they scatter before reaching our eyes, leaving behind the red glow. Not everyone on Earth can see a lunar eclipse at the same time. You'll need to be in an area facing the moon during the moments it's shaded by Earth. Unlike a solar eclipse, you don't need any special equipment to enjoy a lunar eclipse. They're safe to watch at any stage, although a pair of binoculars might make it more fun.
10-second trivia. During which stage of sleep does most dreaming occur? Stage 1, stage 2, REM or ROM? Meaning rapid eye movement, REM sleep is the deep sleep phase where the brain is most active. Ah, to nap or not to nap? That is the next question. Sometimes we just feel like we need a midday slumber, right? Or maybe a lot of times we feel that way. Of course, there is a time and a place for everything. Don't go falling asleep on your teacher. Or teachers, don't go falling asleep on your students. Did you know that 1/3 of adults in the United States take a nap during the day? That's according to the Pew Research Center. Well, CNN's Dr. Sanjay Gupta says a little siesta might be more helpful for our brains than we might think.
There's a bunch of experimental American studies, and what they looked at was essentially whether people who napped versus didn't nap had any cognitive benefits. These studies showed that it looked like people who took a nap did have better cognitive function, so their thinking skills improved, whether that be things like how quickly you process things, your memory, those sorts of thinking skills. So the biggest takeaway is that we found a very clear effect of having a regular daytime nap on the total size of the brain.
The study found that people who had regular naps saw an objective difference in brain size compared to those who didn't. We know that as we age, our brains shrink, and that can be associated with cognitive decline. And what she's fundamentally saying is that people who napped regularly in many ways had younger brains than those who didn't.
Is there a right length of a nap? And is it possible to sleep or nap too much?
One of the issues that people say often, if you sleep for too long in the day, is you wake up feeling groggy, you wake up feeling worse, and that's because you've gone into deep sleep. Your brain is preparing and mimicking that sleep at night and thinks you're now ready to sleep for the rest of the day. So in order to avoid that, we've been quite conservative and said, well, maybe something up to about 30 minutes.
Wake up, lovely people. It's time for today's story, getting a 10 out of 10. Check out this emperor penguin chick trying to emerge from its shell at SeaWorld San Diego. It has a beak malformation, so curators helped it out. On September 12th, this tuxedoed baby became the first emperor penguin to be born at SeaWorld San Diego in a decade. Now that's a penguin. The endangered emperor penguins are native to Antarctica. They can grow to be more than 4 feet tall and weigh up to 90 pounds. This youngin is now growing strong, eating lots of fish, even drinking fish milkshakes. I always thought that penguins ate icebergs or even burritos. We hope you have an ice day. We don't know what old we'd do without you. I'm penguining to think that I've taken this punty far enough. Our first shout out of the week is going to the Tigers at Red Oak Junior and Senior High in Red Oak, Iowa. It's your moment, so own it. I'll leave you with this. For those of us out there feeling a case of the Mondays, remember, what happened the last few days doesn't matter. And what may or may not happen in the days to come doesn't matter either. Right here, right now, that is where the magic can happen. Rise up. I'm Coy Wire, and we are CNN 10.